Hello, I am Bev, and I'm a very grateful member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon Family Groups. I'm going to turn on my timer because I know, that's good for me to have a timer. And I also know there's some workshops at 4 o'clock, so I do not want to interfere with that time. Thank you, Kathy, for the introduction, and Amy, the two of you for inviting me. It really is a privilege to, be asked to come and share. And isn't it wonderful to be together? I mean, just there is something so special and awesome that happens when we're in the rooms together. There's a sense of healing. There's a sense of just warmth and love. And in the Al-Anon workshop earlier today, there was a lady that said, when she feels when we're in the rooms together, we breathe each other in. We breathe each other's existence in, and I just love that. The hospitality and generosity that has been shown to me since I've been asked to come is absolutely everything I would expect from the South. So thank you. My sponsor's name is Leslie, and she wanted me to tell you all hello. So hello from Leslie. She lives in Washington State. She also told me that I'm going to do a great job. So let's just hope that she's correct about that. And before the meeting, Amy hugged me and said, she can't wait to see what God has planned. And I was like, well, yeah, me too. Me too. Yeah. When I go to my home group, which is the Friday Night Literature Study in Bellevue, Nebraska, I am absolutely certain as soon as I walk into the building, my blood pressure drops. My blood pressure lowers. My heart rate probably gets into that rhythm that it's supposed to be in that the doctors like it in. There is just something about being together that I can't get anyplace else. I get certain love and, things when I'm with my family, and I have a lot of camaraderie when I'm at work, but there is something different about being here. My sponsor, Leslie, and I have probably been together, I'm going to guess, about 10 years. Prior to that, I had had a sponsor for a very, very long time. And when I would call her, she could tell by my tone of voice whether I was okay or not, and I liked that. But her name is Zelda. Her husband died, and she started to just have a lot of difficulty with living and just was really going through a bad time. And so she said to us that she sponsored that she really just didn't have the energy right now to sponsor us and that we should find someone else. I was not happy. I was not happy. I was not happy with God because I felt very comfortable with this person. She knew me and I knew her. And I'm sure I was like a little kid, stomping my feet when I said to God out loud, I'm not happy with this, and I have no idea who I'm going to get for a sponsor. So you're going to have to show me who. And immediately two members came to mind. God was letting me know right away, like, hey, I have this, just, calm down. And one of those people I was going to see at a conference coming up. And so I thought, well, just, okay, I'll see how that goes. And I absolutely love this woman. I love her story. I love her recovery. But that sense, that gut feeling told me, no, this isn't the person. And Al-Anon's taught me to trust that sense, to trust that gut feeling that says yes to do this or no to do that. Don't go down this street, turn here, even without any evidence as to why I feel that way. I trust that God is directing me and telling me what to do. So when I got home from this conference, I asked, I called Leslie and said, this is what's going on. And she said she would be happy, to try it out. And so we started this relationship. And, about 6-8 weeks into this sponsorship with her, we were talking one night and just, kind of chatting, about this or that, when we first got on the phone. And then she said to me, how are you doing, kid? And I felt this warmth from the top of my head to the bottom of my toes. And I said, thank you, God. This is going to be good. And it has been. I want to tell you that I want to qualify myself for Al-Anon. I am the youngest of 6 children. I grew up in a small town in eastern Nebraska of about 1,200 people. And I knew from a very early age that my dad had a problem with drinking. I would hear discussions you know, and arguments between my parents where my mom would say, if you would just stop drinking. And my dad would say, but you just don't understand. I understand today what that statement meant. I'm not an alcoholic. When I hear you all alcoholics talk about what alcohol did for you and how it made you feel, that it didn't do that for me. I am not an alcoholic. The few times I ever drank in my life, it made me feel out of control, and I didn't like that. I am not an alcoholic, but I understand so much more today about what alcoholics say it's like for them. My dad would drink for a period of time, and then something always seemed to happen. Maybe a particular vicious argument with my mom, trouble with the law, trouble with an employer, and my dad would go to treatment for 30 days. And he would come home and he would be sober anywhere from a day to several months. And during those times of not drinking, sobriety, whatever you want to call it, he would go to AA meetings. Now, I liked my dad when he was sober. I loved my dad. I absolutely loved my dad. And during those times of not drinking, you know, my dad taught me how to drive. He helped me with my homework. He knew how to fix a flat tire on the bike. You know, we played cards. I loved him. But when he drank, I didn't like him. You know, some of those arguments were ugly. That I saw not only between my mom and my dad, but also some of my siblings. You know, I remember hiding under the bed and leaving the house, you know, to just go ride my bike for a while and get away. Now, there were some things that I saw due to alcoholism that were really terrifying as a child. You know, I would watch my dad go through those uncontrollable shakes. I watched him go through the DTs. I watched him hallucinate. My dad was a semi-driver most of his life, and most of the time he worked for, like, local farmers. And so he could bring home this semi or farm truck, whatever he was driving at the time. You know, he could just bring it home at night, and then it would be there for him in the morning. And, you know, in a town of 1,200 people, you can hear a semi, you know, coming down the street. And so we'd hear him coming, and one of my brothers and I, you know, would go outside, you know, Dad's home. And we had, like, this gravel dirt area in the yard where Dad would, you know, pull up the semi, and when he would open up the cab of the truck, he literally would fall out, and he would crawl into the house because he was so drunk he couldn't stand up. Now that is terrifying as a child, you know, to see. You just don't understand what's going on, and I wished him not to be around. Even though I loved him, I wished for him not to be there when those times would happen. Sometime in my elementary school, my mom started going to Al-Anon. And she would come home from those Al-Anon meetings, and she would tell us that, you know, our dad was an alcoholic, and that he had not asked to be an alcoholic, and that instead of being mad at him when those, you know, times would happen, we should love him and pray for him. Now, and I want to tell you that I think one of the greatest gifts my mom ever gave us is that she never taught us to hate the alcoholic. She really tried to help us understand what was going on, even though I know today my mom didn't understand either. But she tried, you know, to help us. Somewhere in our Al-Anon literature, it says that, you know, if one member of the family gets better, the others benefit. And I benefited from that. Growing up with alcoholism, my mom was a very strong woman. A very strong woman. But with Al-Anon, and you know, she was able to, like, take control of the household because she had to. But one of the things my mom learned in Al-Anon was, you know, to, like, have dinner every evening around the same time, whether the alcoholic was home or not. You know, we had chores to do. All my brothers and sisters and I graduated from high school. And I owe all of that stability that I had growing up, even though there was active alcoholism going on and there were fights that continued. There were, you know, just ugly things that happened because of the disease. My mom was somehow able to maintain a sense of routine and stability, and I owe that to my mom. And you, for telling her, you know, for showing her how to do that. My mom came home from one of those Al-Anon meetings one night and told my brother and I about an Alateen meeting that was in a town not too far from where we lived, and so, you know, we were going to go. I would sometimes go with my parents as a kid to some of those speaker meetings, you know, group anniversary meetings, and I knew that you all got together and ate, and then somebody talked. You know, that's kind of what I knew you did. But I didn't know what was going to, you know, who was going to be at the Salatine meeting or what was going to go on. But I have to tell you that after that first meeting, I was hooked because I did not understand how people I did not know knew what happened in our home. They, too, talked about, you know, hiding under the bed. They, too, talked about, you know, going for a bike ride. You know, they talked about the fights. And I continued to go to that Alateen meeting for the next few years until I graduated from high school. One of the things I learned in Alateen is that my dad drank because he was an alcoholic. My dad did not drink because my room wasn't clean. My dad did not drink because the tire on my bike was flat again. He drank because he was an alcoholic. I also started to hear about the three C's. You know, that I didn't cause it, I can't control it, and I can't cure it. The Alateen sponsor that we had for the majority of the time that I was in Alateen, now this is in the early 80s, and so Alateen at that time was, you know, we had probably 25 or 30 kids in my meeting. She was someone who taught us to be responsible for our meeting, you know, for us to like Kathy did, you know, we read an opening, we had the steps and traditions, you know, we said the Serenity Prayer, we had a topic and we went around the room and shared. Now, we're teenagers. You know, we're going to get out of hand once in a while, and, you know, things are just going to happen. And she would allow for some of that. But then she would, you know, kind of like say, okay, hey, let's get back to the meeting and focus. And what she also tried to do was, you know, one of us would be complaining about something going on at home, something going on at school, problems with siblings, you know, somebody's neighbor you didn't like. And she would let us complain a little bit, but then she would say, how does the topic of the meeting apply to the problem that you have? Well, I didn't know. But, you know, none of us knew. But what she was trying to do was to teach us how to take the spiritual principles and apply it to our lives. Learn how to do this. You know, learn how to live what the principles tell us to live, and not just in the meeting, but being able to take them outside the meeting. The last year that I was in high school, that Alateen sponsor, which I am so grateful for, started to encourage me to go to an Al-Anon meeting as often as I could throughout that year so that I could make the transition from Alateen into Al-Anon when I went off to college. Now, I don't remember exactly how many Al-Anon meetings I went to anymore, you know, during that year. But I went to enough to know that you do the same thing we do. You know, at the Alateen meeting, you know, there's a Serenity Prayer, there's an opening, there's legacies read, and then there's a topic, and you go around the table. So when I graduated from high school and went to college about an hour from my hometown, I called an Al-Anon member that I knew, who lived in that town and asked her to, it was Zelda, you know, and asked her to start taking me to her meetings, and you know, she became my sponsor. And I'm so grateful that Alateen sponsor suggested that I do that. I don't know if I would have made the transition on my own. I don't know. So I'm really grateful that she encouraged me to do that. Now, my mom had gotten involved in area service while I was growing up, and so I went to those area assemblies with her, and that's how I knew who Zelda was. Now, at those assemblies, any of you ever been to assemblies? I had no idea what you were talking about. You know, the language and the terminology and the words and, you know, policies and procedures and whether this could be written or, you know, and motions and all that stuff. I didn't understand what any of that was. But I want to tell you, I do recall gaining an understanding that Al-Anon was a worldwide fellowship. That Al-Anon was not just, you know, my mom's group, the groups in our district, you know, the Alateen meeting I went to. Al-Anon was a worldwide fellowship. You know, I remember listening to the delegate talk about going to the conference and coming back with information. I don't remember the exact details of this, but there was a time that back the World Service Office had asked for, like, that you could adopt, like, groups in other countries. And you would send money to the World Service Office, and then they would send literature to that group, you know, from your area or whoever was adopting the group. And so my area adopted a group in Russia. And so, you know, we had fundraisers, and we collected money and sent it to the World Service Office, and they would send, you know, literature to Russia, to this group. And we did that a few times. And then we got a letter from the group in Russia thanking us, you know, for the literature and having the word of Al-Anon written, you know, so they could read it and they could share it with each other was an experience that is still with me today. You know, I remember that. Now, Zelda was someone, there was just something about her, you know, when she would get up to the podium at those assemblies, she was just someone that I was just drawn to. You know, there was just something about her. So it seemed a natural fit when I went to college in the same town that she lived in, to just call her and start going to the same meetings that she did. Now, I want to tell you that my recovery took off when Zelda became my sponsor. We started working the steps. I got involved in service. I started going to like 3 Al-Anon meetings a week, an open AA speaker meeting. I started going to conferences like this, AA and Al-Anon activities. One of the things that Zelda told me, I want to tell you 2 things about some of the things she told me. One of them was that it was absolutely necessary for me to have a relationship with God. Now, I grew up going to church and Sunday school. I grew up, you know, helping out at Vacation Bible School, catechism, all that stuff. I knew God existed, but I just didn't have that personal relationship with God. Now, whether you agree or not that she told me, you know, I was to have that relationship with God, you know, is, that's what she told me, is I absolutely had to have that. So she told me to put a note on my bathroom mirror that said, "Good morning, God." And so when I was in the bathroom in the morning, you know, washing your, you know, doing all of this, brushing your teeth, you know, I could say, "Good morning, God." And I could ask for some guidance and say a few prayers. And then at night when I was back in that bathroom taking it all off, I could say thank you. Now, I want to tell you that that started me on a relationship with a higher power that today I cannot describe to you in words. The stability and strength that I get from that relationship with God. I am so grateful that she told me that is what I needed to do. One of the other things that Zelda told me to do was when we got to step 6 and 7, I don't know, becoming entirely ready is still not something I like to do today. But she told me to think of the opposite of the defect. You know, instead of telling myself to practice the asset, you know, instead of telling myself in the doctor's office, you know, okay, I'm not going to be impatient, to practice being patient, you know, to practice the asset, to practice being a kind and loving person. And I continue to do that today. You know, what is the behavior that I want to exhibit in a situation? What type of person do I want to be? And then to practice that. Zelda knew that for me to just sit and, you know, okay, I'm not going to do this. You know, I'm not going to be judgmental. Wasn't going to work. You know, I needed an action. I mean, I needed something to do. And so I so appreciate that. You know, just telling me to think of the assets, you know, instead of practicing the defect, practice the asset. I want to back up a little bit. My freshman year of college, I just, you know, it was really becoming painful to go home. And my dad is still drinking at this point. And I stayed in touch with my mom by phone, but I just really didn't go home very much. I still had the idea, even though I had been learning and hearing about the family disease of alcoholism and, you know, that my dad drank because he was an alcoholic. I knew about alcoholics also being powerless. But I still had this idea that if my dad really wanted to, he could. If he really wanted to quit drinking, he could, because I knew that he knew how. Because he'd been, you know, he'd had periods of not drinking. So how come he can't? I still kind of held on to this, like, self-will idea that it was his self-will, that if he really wanted to, he could. Now, I don't remember why I went home on this particular, you know, afternoon. I was in college. You know, I probably went home to get money, have them fill up my car with gas, you know, do my laundry, get food. I came in the house, and I was standing at the kitchen table talking to my mother for a few minutes, and my father entered the room. And I want to tell you that I hope that my higher power never, ever lets me forget what he looked like that day. He was deathly thin. You know, his eyes were sunken in, his cheekbones were sticking out. He had that gray skin color that looks like death. He looked like a concentration camp victim. And I was terrified. I saw the disease of alcoholism. God let me see it. It was right in front of me. And I accepted the first half of the first step, not only for myself, that I was powerless, but he was too. I saw that my dad too was powerless over alcohol. Now, when I drove back to Lincoln that day, I cried the whole way, and the only place I knew to go was to my sponsor's house. And when I got there, I sat at her kitchen table and cried. I was just terrified he was going to die. And Zelda's husband, Mark, was a member of AA, and the two of them, told me, if he dies, if that's the plan, you'll have this program to walk through, and we'll help you. But they also told me to never give up hope. You know that God creates miracles, and to just turn him over every day. So I did, and I don't know anymore how many months or weeks it was, that every day I just turned him over. I just gave him to God. Whatever you're going to do, God, I know I'm going to be okay. I know this is going to be okay. And, sometime later, maybe a few months, my mom called me one day and told me that my dad had checked himself into the hospital. Now, my dad was ill. He was sick. He needed some medical attention. But I want to tell you that somehow I intuitively knew that sobriety had come. I don't know where that came from other than God. God told me that it was here. And I want to tell you that I saw for the next 7.5 years before my dad died the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous. I saw my dad become the person that I always knew was there. I saw him get involved in AA. And my mom was in Al-Anon. And I have to tell you, my parents' home was like this revolving door. There was alcoholics and Al-Anon members coming through all the time. The home group that my parents had in this small town of 1,200 people, there was no place at 9, 10 o'clock at night to go for coffee. So the coffee and pie was at my parents' house. I'd come home after a football game in high school, and there were all these, there were just all these people in my house, and it was, and you all were weird. And now I'm one, now I'm one of them. My family had an opportunity to heal. And I am so grateful that I did not give up hope. My dad was 59 when he got sober. So, never give up hope. Now, my dad had drank and smoked for a very, very long time. And, it did take a toll on his body. And the last couple years he was alive, it just, you could see that, you could just see decline. You could just see that his health wasn't what you had hoped it would be. And in February of 1996, my dad went into the hospital for just a minor procedure. It was nothing serious. It was just something that needed to be done. And before I tell you this, I want to tell you quickly about how I watched my parents make amends. My parents didn't always get to some of our activities, school events, because alcoholism, And you can't turn the clock back and change that and go to those events, that they missed. I watched my parents go to absolutely every sporting activity, school event of the grandkids. My parents would drive for hours to go to some 15-minute preschool program. I want to tell you, though, that, that's how they made amends. They went to all of those programs of the grandkids. And those grandkids and my family that had that experience, they still talk about that today. They're adults now and have their own children. But they still talk about that grandma and grandpa were in the audience. I don't even know where I was. So my dad went in for this minor procedure. That procedure was fine. But afterwards, my dad began to have trouble breathing. And all the, things that they tried, putting on the oxygen mask, all of that, none of that was working. And so they ended up putting him on a respirator, and then my dad had 2 strokes. And so I took a leave of absence from work, and for the next 30 days, my family and I lived at the hospital and waited for him to die. There was nothing left undone between my dad and I. And that is because of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon. That is because of the principles that we learn here. And I know not everybody gets that. I know not everybody gets that. And so I am so grateful that when I knew that my dad knew I loved him, and I knew that he loved me. So the night that my dad passed away, I have to tell you, that really was the first time in my life I had felt that kind of devastation that can bring you to your knees. I loved my dad, and I didn't want to let him go. I wanted to continue to have more of what, you know, that family we were having, but it was his time, you know. It was his time to go. I want to tell you that, you know, my dad's death was the beginning of about a 4.5-year period that brought a lot of loss to my family. A couple months after my dad died, I had a sister-in-law who committed suicide. She left behind my brother and 5 children. Now, I don't understand suicide. I have had times in my life when I have been very sad and depressed, but not to the point where I thought taking my own life was a solution, and I'm grateful for that. I am grateful that those thoughts did not come to mind. When I got home from that, my sister-in-law's funeral, there was an AA friend waiting for me. And he was someone who I knew had attempted more than once, you know, to take his own life. And he shared with me some of his most deepest, darkest thoughts that got him to the place of wanting to take his own life. One time during his drinking years and one time in sobriety. His name was TJ. TJ knew that I did not understand suicide. I know that he knew that. And so he came to try and help me understand. You know, that's what we do for each other. You know, we try and help each other understand what it's like. And I still don't understand it, but I'm so grateful that he was waiting for me when I got home, you know, to try and help me understand what was going on, what she went through to get there. I also want to tell you, I'm a bit of a chicken. You know, suicide is not something, you know, that is going to cross my mind. I am much more on the other end of being homicidal. You know, if I can just get rid of you, you know, you are the problem. You know, your behavior, your actions, if you would just do as I said, you know, if you would follow my script, all would be good. Sometime maybe in the next year after that, you know, and I'm going to extra meetings during this time. That's something I learned in Al-Anon. You know, not to back away from the program when bad things happen. I needed to pick up my meetings. I found other meetings to go to, and not just, you know, not in, along with, the, you know, my home group and the other meetings that I went to. I needed to hear. I just needed to be with you. Tapes, you know. Oh, God, I just called them tapes. I'm sorry. CDs, you know, they were tapes in my day, you know, tapes. At that time, they were tapes. They were valuable because, you know, I could listen to them in the car. I could listen to them on the weekends when I was at home. I needed the program. I needed all of you. Maybe a year or two after my sister-in-law died, I had a brother who was arrested and charged with a crime that is just horrific. The brother that I knew, this particular brother, was the kind of guy that got down on the floor and played with his kids. This was one of the brothers that, you know, during family holidays, I stayed up wee hours into the night playing cards. My brother at one time had worked for the church. And so the brother that I knew and the brother that the news and the newspapers were saying what he did and what he was did not mesh. I didn't know who that person was. I did not know this person. I knew this person. And so it was a very difficult time for my family in that year and a half before he went to prison. We, you know, we supported him and went to a lot of the court hearings and, you know, walked through a difficult thing with God. You know, God helped us get through that. Now, my brother pled no contest to the crime, and so whatever he did or didn't do is between him and God, and I've come to peace with that today. It haunted me for a while, you know, because I'm the youngest of 6. I mean, the 6 of us had the same parents. You know, we got the same DNA. You know, how can someone that is very similar to me have done that? or be even accused of it. And I had to work through that. And so, you know, and I love my brother. Whatever his behavior is between him and God. And, you know, Al-Anon has taught me over the years to love the person, to love the alcoholic and dislike the behavior. I was able to apply that same principle. I love my brother, but whatever he did or did not do is none of my business. Again, that is between him and God. Now, I visited him several times in the county jail. Our area assemblies happened to be in the same city that he was in the county jail that he was in. So, you know, God provided for me. God gave me an opportunity to go visit my brother in jail when I would go to the area assemblies. But my brother was, you know, he went off to prison. And my brother is still in prison today. If he lives another 7 years, I believe he will have served his sentence. So, you know, we'll see what God has planned. But I want to tell you about the first night I went to go visit him in the Nebraska State Penitentiary. One of my older sisters and my mom had already been there a few times to see him, and so I went with this one sister, and she knew the ropes. You know, she knew how to walk, which door you go in and where you sign in, and then, you know, you get in this line and wait, you know, to go in to see the person you're there to see. Now, I'm a bit uneasy because, you know, I mean, you're at the Nebraska State Penitentiary, and I'm here to see my brother. You know, so it's just a bit unnerving, you know. And I want to tell you, from behind me, I hear somebody say, "Hello, Bev." Now, I'm already a bit uneasy, and now I'm terrified. You know, and as I'm turning my head, I'm thinking, who knows me? I mean, I'm at the Nebraska State Penitentiary. Who knows me here? And when I turn around, it is three guys from AA who are there to bring in the meeting for that night. You know, thank you, God. Thank you for that. You know, because just seeing them, hugging them, getting to talk to them for a minute or two, settled me. You know, God provided. You know, God provided for me that night. About a year or so after my brother, went to prison, my mom was killed in a horrible, horrible car accident. My mom was sitting in her car in the drive-thru of a restaurant when a 25-ton loaded dump truck came down the streets that had lost its brakes. And that truck went through an intersection and hit a car and killed a 19-year-old girl. And then it jumped the curb and it crashed into my mom and into the building. And it killed her. Both of my parents were 67 when they died. I was 27 when my dad died and 31 when my mom died. And that is not how I would have written the story. Grief is one of those things in my life where I have grown and matured and built my faith more than probably anything else that has come into my life. It's not what I would have chosen, but it's what I got. It's what I got. And so, I got through it. And I'll tell you a little bit about that here in a minute. I called, my sponsor, and I called another Al-Anon friend, and you know, I knew that they would be calling everybody. And because those people were calling me, those people were, you know, showing up at the house. I talked to my mom the night before she died. And if I would have known when I hung up that phone that was the last time I was going to ever talk to her, you know, there's no way to cope with that. I really believe there's a reason God does not give me a crystal ball. Because those things that are coming that are going to bring me pain and sorrow, I would be frantically doing everything that I can to change them. And even those good things that are coming to me, I wouldn't appreciate, because how come I got to wait a year for that? You know, how come it's going to be 5 years down the road before I get to have that good thing? How come I can't have it now? You know, I would not appreciate it. And so it's so much better for me to let God be in charge. Just let God be in charge of my life and absolutely know that whatever is put in front of me, I'm going to be able to get through. And also enjoy the good things that my higher power gives me, and to thank my higher power for those things. After my mom died, it had been 4.5 years of a lot of loss, and I just was struggling. I want to tell you that was probably the I was so grateful for my job at that time because it forced me to get out of bed in the morning, take a shower, and get out among the living. I know that I wasn't the most productive for a while at work, but, you know, God bless them that, you know, I had a full-time job. And that, because otherwise it would have been very easy for me to just kind of stay home, close the blinds, not answer the phone, and just get morbidly depressed. Now, on one particular day that was just hard, I heard myself say out loud, God, I need just a little bit more faith. I need just a little bit more faith and I can get through today. Now, I don't know if that was the first time I had ever said that or if that was the first time I heard myself say that, but either way, I turned a corner that day. I not only knew that God was with me, but I could feel Him. I could feel my higher power with me. I knew that there was hope. I knew that I was going to be okay. It continued to be the most difficult stretch of my life, you know, just grieving all of those losses. But I learned not to let it paralyze me. I learned that I can do hard things. I can feel bad. I can feel hurt. But I can also get up and go to work. I can also go to the meeting. I can also answer the phone when that sponsee calls. I want to tell you that in 1994, I got married. I was 25 or 26. I met my husband, Joe, in the program. He was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I got married for life. I loved my husband. And, you know, when you're married to someone in the program, you know, you get crabby with each other. You get, you know, impatient, you know. You say things to each other. But, you know, you go to meetings and you come home and say, you know, I'm sorry about that. And, you know, you make amends. And do you notice, too, that, like, when you come to a thing like this and you go home, you like each other better? I don't know. You know, you go to meetings and you just somehow like each other better. It's just, you know, I don't know how that happens, but, you know, it's a God thing. We had a good life together. My husband was with me, you know, during these events that I just shared with you. We walked through the death of his parents. My husband had a heart condition, and so, you know, there was a lot of just stuff that went on with that. Surgeries, doctor visits, emergency visits, you know, things that went on. My husband was 15 years older than me, and when he retired, the small town in southwest Nebraska that we had lived in for several years, even though that town had been good to us, we had no reason to stay there. He has two daughters from his first marriage, and, you know, they didn't live there. We didn't have any family. There was no reason to keep us there, and so we were going to sell the house and move. But we couldn't agree on a place to go. So one day my husband mentioned to me, he goes, what about buying an RV? What if we sell the house and buy an RV and, you know, travel around for a little bit? And after discussion and, you know, prayer and thinking about this, yes, that's what we did. We sold the house and bought an RV and did some traveling. Now, the thing I want to tell you that I was the most concerned about to do this is that how was I going to get to meetings? This is prior to the pandemic. Okay, this is prior to the pandemic. There were different electronic Al-Anon meetings at that time, but not to the extent that happened during the pandemic and what we have now. But because of service in Al-Anon, because of the types of service that I've done in Al-Anon, I knew people everywhere. I knew people everywhere. And I knew that I could call an Al-Anon member, whatever state we were in, and say, hey, what meeting do you go to? Or they would direct me to, you know, someone in their district or someone in that part of the state that you know, to call and could, you know, tell me what meeting to go to. I also looked at the area websites, you know, about what meeting might be physically close to me or what, you know, and I would just say, okay, God, I need help picking a meeting, you know. Sometimes I liked the name of the meeting, you know, I would just trust that God was directing me as to where I needed to go. I want to tell you, though, that when we started living in the RV, my husband stopped going to meetings. Well, I shouldn't say that. There was one summer that we were in Montana, and his name was Joe. He went to, and it was a small town in Montana that we were at this campground for the summer, and there was a small AA meeting that he went to pretty regularly that summer. And I want to tell you that I noticed a difference, you know, when he was going to that meeting. Now, what I found myself doing was, you know, I would look for Al-Anon meetings that also had an AA meeting at the same time and location, and I would say, oh, look at this, you know? You know, there's an Al-Anon meeting just down the street, and there's an AA meeting at the same time. You want to go? I found myself looking up the AA websites, you know, and suggesting, you know, a meeting that might be close. It did not take me long to stop that, because I know that's not my responsibility. I am responsible for myself, and Al-Anon has so taught me that over the years. The only person I can change is me. Is me. And I want to tell you that without meetings, my husband quickly became very difficult to live with. The criticism, it wasn't just criticism about what I did or how I did something. It was criticism about my values. It was criticism of things that were important to me. Insults about how I looked, about my family. I'm very close with my family, and so, you know, that's something that hurt. Now, my husband was a conservationist, and he gave me an absolute appreciation for the outdoors. You know, for the clouds and the mountains and the waters and the trees and the wildlife and how all of that works together. I never looked outside before like I do now. You know, I see things and notice things that Joe taught me. Like I said, he had two children from his first marriage, and my husband loved his girls, absolutely loved those girls. Those girls were so much a part of our life. He supported them. We went to their activities, and they loved their dad. My husband also always said thank you after a meal. And it's important for me to remember those things. It's important for me to keep those things in mind, so I want to share that with you. I pulled out absolutely every Al-Anon tool I had ever used or heard in trying to cope with what was going on. I remember at one time, you know, trying to like imagine like this imaginary force field around me. And so when those words, you know, and insults would come at me, they would just kind of bounce off this force field and, you know, go someplace else that they didn't penetrate. But it became bad. It became really bad for me. And I found myself on edge. I found myself going for walks and screaming at God and crying. I found myself like, okay, I need to talk to him about this. Can I talk to him before when I get up, having coffee? Can I talk to him about this, you know, at a commercial? Maybe it'll take longer than the commercial's going to be. You know, I was crazy. And, you know, I tried things like, you know, leaving the room. I tried things like, you know, hey, honey, I love you too. You know, a little sarcasm. You know, sometimes I would, you know, try and talk to him and reason things out. Sometimes I argued back. All of that worked, and all of it didn't work. I know that in some ways I was, you know, trying to like make it okay, it was just bad. And one of those times that I talked to my sponsor, Leslie, I don't know what to do. I mean, and I am absolutely crazy. I mean, I began to feel different. I could tell that I was feeling different. I was on edge. And, you know, I don't know what to do anymore. And she said, you know what, Bev, maybe you should ask your higher power to show you what's in your best interest. Sure, let's try it. I mean, it's worth a shot. I mean, great. I'm going to start doing that. And I want to tell you that it was within a few weeks of me doing that that my higher power began to show me what was in my best interest. And what was in my best interest was to move to Omaha, Nebraska. I had to do a little research about, you know, What does it cost to live in Omaha? I had to go back to work because I hadn't worked now for, gosh, I think 4 or 5 years. You know, and I had been out of the work field, and, you know, I didn't know, like, you know, am I even going to be able to get a job, and what kind of job am I going to be able to get? And so I had to do a little research about, you know, jobs and the cost and whether the RV could, you know, could we winterize the RV? Is Joe coming with me? Is he not? But on the day that I said to my husband, I'm going to Omaha, was I have to tell you the most terrifying and courageous thing I have ever said in my life. And I went to Omaha. My husband did initially go with me to Omaha, but it wasn't too long, within a few months, that my husband Joe wanted to continue to live in the RV and travel. And so... So he left. We got a divorce, and amicably. When I got married, if someone would have said to me, Bev, you're going to be divorced someday, I said, no, I am not. No, I got married for life. I got married for life. I never, ever would have thought that I would be standing up here one day telling you that I'm divorced. I've learned it now, and I'm never to say never. You know, that's never going to happen to me. I'm never going to do that. I'm never going to live there, because guess what? Those things have happened. I never thought I would live in an RV. I mean, never. I mean, that would never have come to my mind. I lived in an RV for about 4 or 5 years. But you know what? God strategically and perfectly let me know that it was in my best interest to be in Omaha. I needed a job, and I got a job within a week. And I still have that job today. God put me exactly where I needed to be with the coworkers and the type of job I do. I enjoy going to work today. And there was a time I had a job for about 15 years. I did not enjoy going to work. I got involved in things like gossip and criticism of my coworkers. I got involved in things that were none of my business. Because, you know, I'd been there a long time. You know, I knew stuff, and I would tell you that I knew that stuff. And I suffered. I mean, I suffered because I caused problems. I created some problems for myself. Now, I am in Al-Anon this whole time. Let's just remember this. I am in Al-Anon this whole time. I have a sponsor I'm talking to regularly. I'm working the steps. I'm going to meetings. But, you know, I grew up in the program. You know, I grew up, and, you know, I've made mistakes, embarrassed myself, you know, did things that I wished I wouldn't have done in front of all of you. You know, because I, you know, like some of the speakers talked about, you know, having a life outside AA or Al-Anon and then coming in here and, you know, learning to make amends. I had to make amends. You all saw it, you know, so making amends, thank God we have steps and spiritual principles that allow me to clean that up and make amends. Because, you know, you were the ones I needed to make amends to for how I behaved. I got a job. And today in that job, I work really, really hard to not get involved in gossip. To just, you know, coworkers talk about somebody else, I don't have to say anything. You know, because they aren't asking me a question. They're just talking. And I've learned that in Al-Anon, to listen to what people are saying, because so often people are just talking. They haven't said to me, what do you think? You know, what's your opinion? You know, but I've often given it because I wasn't listening. You know, I'm really grateful that I've learned to listen. I've just really learned to listen. And so they're just like, I'm like, And then I get back, and then I just go back to what I was doing at work. I needed a car. And within a week, I had a car. I needed a place to live. And within a month, I had a place to live. I also was going to Omaha because my two sisters and my niece and her family live there. And I am very close with my family. And I had not been physically around my family regularly for like over 20 years. And it's absolutely wonderful that we can just go to coffee on Saturday morning. You know, it's wonderful we can get together, and, you know, this time of year we've gone to some outdoor craft fairs, and, you know, just being together is really a wonderful, I just needed to come home. I also in Omaha knew several Al-Anon members because of that service. You know, I knew people. I knew people in Omaha. And Omaha AA and Al-Anon is one of those, actually it's Bellevue, Nebraska, not in Omaha. The Bellevue, Nebraska AA and Al-Anon is very much one of those pockets of enthusiasm that Genevieve talked about. There's a lot of just enthusiasm and camaraderie, fellowship, and I needed that. I knew that I would be able to just walk into an Al-Anon family. And I knew the recovery there was good. And I want to tell you that, you know, in the Al-Anon's fifth tradition talks about, you know, giving comfort and welcoming and giving comfort to the families of alcoholics. And that's not just for the newcomer. You know, those of us who have been around, I needed to be welcomed and comforted. You know, my life was changing. I mean, greatly. I mean, all new things. I was 49 years old when I got divorced, and for the first time in my life, I'm living by myself. You know, I mean, I grew up with my parents. I went to college. I had a roommate. I lived with some family members, and I got married. So I've never lived on my own before. You know, so I'm living on my own. I got my car loan by myself. You know, I called and got my utilities hooked up. You know, you'd think it would probably be time I'd finally do this. This is the time that God had planned for me to do it. So, and you know, those Al-Anon members just put me right in the middle. They engulfed me and have included me in absolutely everything. You know, they would tell me about coffees that they, were going to. They'd invited me to coffee. They'd invite me out to eat. They just, made me feel like that I was a part of. And I so appreciate that. The AA community was also very welcoming. Today I want to tell you that my sponsor and I have, my clock says I have 7 minutes so from an hour, so I'm going to start to wrap it up. My sponsor and I are going through the steps again, just kind of for like an overview. I mean, not just anything real. At least so far, not anything real in depth, but just, you know, kind of an overview, just reminding myself of what those principles are. And we just finished with step three. And I want to tell you the word in step three that continues to jump out at me is that I turn my will and my life over to the care of God. You know, my sponsor says that she often thinks about, you know, like your hands, you know, the palm, you know, hands put together, and that, you know, she's sitting in the palm of those hands, and that's her higher power. And that too, that vision, that thought, you know, has come to my mind. But I was telling her how, you know, I think about how I cared about my dog. You know, I cared about whether she was happy or not. I cared about making sure she had fresh water and food. I cared that we went for walks. I cared that we played. I cared so much about, you know, making sure we got a lot of cuddle time. I made sure she always had those soft, fuzzy blankets to lay on. And, you know, those awful commercials would come on, you know, about animals that, you know, are abused and neglected. I can't even watch them. You know, I got to turn the TV. But when those commercials would come on, I would say to Gracie, never you, Gracie, never any neglect. I mean, all I ever want you to know is love and joy. And I did absolutely everything in my power to make sure that that's the type of life she had. Now, my husband, Joe, told me that I needed to go see a psychiatrist for how over-the-top, crazy, wild I was about our dog. And I would tell him, you see a psychiatrist when you're unhappy. I am, you know, I'm happy. I'm happy being wild and crazy and over-the-top about the dog. And I would tell her, you know, I knew that she knew I loved her, but I wanted her to feel it, you know, and I would tap on her heart. I wanted to make sure that she felt that love. And when I think that my higher power loves me and cares about me like I cared about my dog, I'm good. You know, I mean, it's good. I mean, because I know that feeling that I had for her. You know, she's my kid, you know, as you know, you know, those of you who have pets or have had pets, you know, how maybe you're not quite as crazy as I was, but you know, you're crazy, absolutely crazy about the animals. And that, thank you, God. Thank you for giving me the dog. But you know, just thank you that that I can make that comparison, because I know the depths that I cared about her. And, you know, that's how my higher power cares about me. You know, I'm going to be okay. Today, in the morning, I read, I'm currently reading the Al-Anon, the Hope for Today. Every year I kind of like to do something different, where it be, you know, the one day at a time, courage to change, you know, but right now I'm reading the Hope for Today. And I don't know that I've ever read that book completely through. You know, I know that I looked at it like looking up topics, but I really don't think that that daily reader I have ever read through. And so it's been real enjoyable. And so I read the page for the day. I say some prayers. You know, I turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand him, and ask, you know, for his, the courage and strength to carry it out, you know, to carry out his will. And I do spend a few minutes, meditating. Depending on how much time I gave myself before I needed to leave for work, you know, I usually set a timer. It might be a couple minutes, it might be 5 minutes, but at least what's been really important for me is to just shut off the TV, and just sit in the quiet and just see if there's anything that my higher power wants to, you know, share with me. Sometimes there is something that comes to mind, oftentimes not, and that's okay. But just that quiet settles me. Gives me that strength and courage, you know, that I need. And at night, I say thank you, and I have a few questions that I ask myself at night, and then I read the Al-Anon has a Just for Tonight book card, and so bookmark, and so I read that. And I have to tell you, when I do that consistently, the traffic going to work doesn't bother me. You know, I actually am kind, you know, and let somebody in, you know, ahead of me. I'm not offended, you know, by things that people might say that otherwise I would have been offended. I sleep better. That daily conscious contact has been absolutely so important for me. And it doesn't have to be big and elaborate. Just that daily routine of staying in touch with my higher power. I think it was Ron that talked about, you know, not having an AA program without God. And, you know, I can't have an Al-Anon program without God. My higher power is an absolute weaved into everything that I do and say. And I need to stay close to Al-Anon. You know, I go to Al-Anon meetings a week, and I go to an open AA speaker meeting once a week. I have people that I sponsor that I talk to throughout the week. I talk with my sponsor once a week. I read the Al-Anon literature. I need to stay close to Al-Anon, because I know just being away from, you know, like if for some reason I haven't been to a meeting, you know, like if you've been out of town, or, you know, things happen sometimes, you know, that you haven't been, you know, you might miss a few meetings. Oh my God, can I feel it? And, you know, and I would think after I've been in Al-Anon this long, I would think I could certainly go a couple days, you know, without, you know, having that conscious contact. I could miss a meeting and be okay. Apparently not. I need the contact with all of you. That is what keeps me sane. That is what keeps me going, because all of you are like God with skin. There is a paragraph in the Al-Anon pamphlet, Understanding Ourselves in Alcoholism, that I always like to close with. Thank you again so much for inviting me. Okay. It says, while we may have been driven to Al-Anon by the effects of someone else's drinking, we soon come to know that our own thinking has to change before we can make a new and successful approach to living. It is in Al-Anon that we learn to deal with our feelings of guilt. It is through the fellowship that we ease our emotional burdens by sharing our experience, strength, and hope with others. Little by little, we come to realize at our meetings that much of our discomfort comes from our attitudes. We begin to change these attitudes and learn about our responsibilities to ourselves. Oh, God, I'm so sorry. I thought I'd shut that off. We discover feelings of self-worth and love, and we grow spiritually. The emphasis begins to be lifted from the alcoholic and placed where we do have some power over our own lives. Thank you for my life.